are listening to Radio Albion. Hello everybody and welcome to tonight's stream. We're live on Odyssey, Rumble, DLive and Entropy, and I'm joined tonight by the lovely Laura Towler. We've got a lot to talk about actually tonight. We're going to do a bit of a review of last year and what we achieved. We're going to talk about our goals for this year. We're going to talk about the highs and lows of 2025 as an organisation. And we've got some announcements, including the demonstration in Warwick. We've got a big surprise coming about the demonstration in Warwick, about speakers who are going to be there. And on top of that, we've also got some dates for big events that are coming up this year as well. So this stream isn't just for us to talk about the forthcoming demonstration, but to talk about some other things as well and to give a bit of an update on PA, because we used to do one of these PA update streams once a month. It was our sort of last Friday in every month, then it moved to the first Friday in every month so we could include activism from the last weekend of the month. But obviously, with Sam going to jail, we had a bit of a problem where Laura was looking after both of the children on her own. She couldn't do the streams and that kind of lapsed. And obviously, I didn't want to do them on my own. I did a couple maybe on my own, but it's not really the same if Laura's not here. Me and Laura sort of obviously get on very well. We work together. We speak every day, sometimes multiple times. And it's one of those things where I just didn't feel it was the same without her, and it wouldn't have been good to carry on the streams without her. But she's back now, so we're going to get into this. But before we do, please give the stream a share. And also, if you can, please consider making a small donation. You can donate via Entropy, you can donate via Rumble. All the donation links are there in the live chat, and you can donate via crypto as well. And if you're watching on replay, you can also donate on replay by hitting Entropy. You can donate any time of the day or night, 24/7 over on Entropy, and you can subscribe to me over on Rumble at any time of the day or night too. It's only $5 a month, and it really helps me if people do subscribe. If I could get my subscribers up to a decent number, that would basically cover me at the beginning of the month, and then there wouldn't be the stress of basically wondering how many super chats you're going to get throughout a month. And $5 is not really very much. I think current price in the UK, that's about sort of, you know, £3.50 a month. And, you know, if that's not a deal, I don't know what is. To get all the content I pump out for £3.50 a month, that's a good deal. Anyway, you can donate via whatever means you want. And you can also write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And remember, everything we do is free. Nothing goes behind a paywall. And I am available for anyone at any time when you need me. And that's all in with the price. So $3, $5, $10, whatever you can afford, please help keep us funded. It means a lot to us, and we do an awful lot for the community and for the country as a whole. So the first thing I'm going to say before I introduce Laura is Happy New Year. This is probably the last stream of the year where I'll say Happy New Year, because we're past the first week of the month. But this is the first PA stream of the year. So Happy New Year to all the PA viewers out there. And Laura, how are you doing? Did you have a good Christmas and New Year? It's good to have you on for this first stream of the year.
Hey, well, good evening and hello to everyone who's watching and listening at home. Yeah, I had a really good Christmas. We had Christmas dinner at ours, so Sam and I cooked for 10 people, which was a challenge, but I think it turned out okay. And New Year, I think I went to bed at 11 o'clock, so I didn't really see it until the next morning. But yeah, it's been good. And this week, we've just been having a big clear out at home and getting rid of like old toys that the kids don't play with anymore, and they're both up into the next size of clothing, so we're getting rid of the clothes that are too small. And do you know when you just have like a New Year reset and you like get rid of all the stuff that you don't need anymore, take some to charity and give some to family and friends and that kind of thing? And I'm feeling very calm now because we've got rid of a lot of the stuff that we don't use or need anymore, so it's a lot tidier. So that's what I've been doing this week. And I have been, obviously last year, the year before, with Sam being away, with him staying in an AP as well, even after he got out of prison, it meant that I was unable to do things on an evening because I had the children by myself. But now Sam's back at home full time. He can do daddy duty and I can do this again. So it's good to be back.
Well, it's certainly good to have you back. As I said, it was never the same doing it without you. But I thought tonight we'd do a little bit of a review of what PA achieved last year. I've not broken it down month by month, but I've sort of wanted to talk about some of the bigger things we did, some of the things that I thought were outstanding. And I thought last year was kind of a strange year because you and I usually don't meet a little bit later in the year. Sort of the Christmas lull sort of goes into New Year, but it was kind of one of those weird things. I remember last year, or the beginning of last year, because we'd only just gone past New Year's Day. There was a little demonstration in Leeds, and I was actually getting sort of ready. I just got out of the shower and I was about to sort of get dressed to come to this demonstration. And an unknown number rang. And I was thinking to myself, well, you know, is this somebody coming to the demo? I better answer it because if it's somebody who's sort of, you know, lost or needs advice or the time. So I pick it up and it was like, hello, I am so-and-so from BBC Wales. We've sent you a letter. We'd like for you to respond to all the allegations. And last year sort of started with this huge attack on us by the mainstream media. And you and I met that day to do the demonstration in Armley, which is part of Leeds. And we had a pretty good reception. It was a good day, but there was a lot on our minds that day because it was one of those weird things where when these things hit you, you kind of feel a little bit blindsided because obviously they're undercover reporters, you don't know they're coming, and when they do come at you, it's a bit sort of like you just feel like you've been sucker punched. And I remember getting the letter as a PDF and scrolling through it and thinking to myself, you know, how bad's this going to be? But we turned that round really well because I offered to go and do the interview with BBC Wales. I went to BBC Manchester to do it. I spoke to them for about an hour and 15 minutes, secretly recorded it, put the whole thing out online. They edited it down to about 45 seconds, which tells you the quality of my rebuttals. You know, if you've done an hour and 15 minutes and all they can squeeze out of it is 45 seconds of highly edited material. I was pretty proud of that. We got a really good reception. But when the documentary came out, it kind of went the complete opposite way that the establishment hoped it would go. We got a huge amount of support. We have had even sort of celebrities, famous people, influencers who wouldn't say, look, I'm not going to call them ethno-nationalists because I don't think they're aligned with us, but they were absolutely disgusted. They watched it. They thought we were nice people. You know, lots of people were kind enough to share the video I did or the audio file that I produced about the truth of my debate with the BBC guy. I forget his name now, actually. Was it something Davis? And he was basically one of these guys that from Wales, he's meant to be sort of that their top guy in Wales. And I kind of spent an hour and 15 minutes completely mincing him to everyone's amusement. I really wish we'd actually recorded it with a video and not just audio, because his face at times, he was seething. I don't think he'd ever spoken to anyone like me before. And he was expecting me to sort of crumble and crawl under the table and beg for forgiveness. So when I was sort of quite in his face, he didn't like that one bit. And that was a real positive. So I thought the year got off to a good start. And obviously, when you head into a new year, you sort of want to build on what you did last year or the previous 12 months. And I thought we hit the ground running there. And for me, even though it was early in the year, that was definitely one of the highlights of the year. I don't know whether to give all my points or then to let you do a point now. That was sort of my big opening of the year. What was your first highlight of the year?
Well, I loved the documentary, actually, not liked. And obviously it's not the first one that's been made about us. Was that the third one? There was the Dispatches, wasn't there, with I'm being serious, that guy. And then I think there was another one in the middle, and then this one. And all three of them have backfired. If you look at the comments underneath them on any platform, in fact, I think the first one they even removed because it was such an own goal. They're so out of tune with what the public think and want. And they're on the high horses in their ivory towers, preaching to everyone about diversity and all this stuff. And then when they present us as bad people and put that in front of the public are just like, not wrong with that. Like, I agree with it. So it's always an own goal. I hope they keep making them about us, because every time they've done one, it's just brought more eyes on Patriotic Alternative, more publicity towards us. And it's always very enjoyable watching you perform, Mark, and debate. And I think every time you do it, you know, you prove to everyone why you're in the position that you're in and why you're our leader at Patriotic Alternative.
Well, thank you.
When we get those letters through, I remember, you know, reading it for the first time, and it's like, here is all the evidence for the documentary, and you're just like, oh, okay, what have they got this time? What someone said? And you read through it, and I remember phoning you up afterwards saying there's no ear. Like, is that it? There's nothing there. I think the worst thing they had was a guy who was part of Pierre but wasn't anymore saying something away from Pierre, so not at an event, not in front of me and you, no one could pick him up on it, but saying something at work away from Pierre, and obviously they used that to try and make us look like bad people. But yeah, it was a big own goal, and yeah, that, bring on the next one, because they always go well. I think, you know, we know how to respond to them, and we know what the public want, because we are normal members of the public ourselves. Do you want me to tell you what my favourite thing was last year?
Yeah, you can go with favourite or the first thing that jumps to your mind, because I've sort of got five big things I was going to sort of talk about, but go on. You give your first.
It's not one thing.
Take it in turns. It's more fun that way.
Okay. It might not be an answer that you expect, because it's a bit of a boring answer, but I think it's also a powerful answer, and it is the truth. And for me, it's the consistency of Patriotic Alternative, because we're 6 going on to 7 years old now. And at the end of the week, when I check Telegram and see all the activity that we've done up and down the country, every single week there's 5, 6, 7 more sometimes events, whether they're socials, you know, activism, street stalls, demos, leafleting, community events, advocacy, the wide range of things that we do at PA. There's multiple events happening up and down the country, England, Scotland and Wales, every single week. And tell me another organisation that's doing that, you know, that's our size and our age. Tell me another organisation that's doing that. And it's not just the consistency, but it's the quality of the activists and the quality of the events as well. And we're suspended from all social media, all mainstream social media. We don't have it anymore. And we're still being this consistent when it comes to events. And also the size of the events, you know, our camp last year was the biggest camp we've ever had. We don't have Facebook, we don't have Twitter, we don't have Instagram, we're banned from everywhere. You can't even link to our website on Twitter, you can't even search our website on Google. I think it appears on like page 5 or something, and then it doesn't let you through to it. But still, you know, our events are growing, and the consistency of our events is consistent, or sometimes even growing as well. So I think for me, that is a sign that we're doing the right thing, and our enemies must just absolutely hate that, because they can try and ignore us all they want, but at the end of the day, you know, we're here and we're here to stay, and we're doing well. And I think it just shows how many people do really love the organization and have put a lot of effort into the organization, and I'm very proud of those people and very happy to be working alongside them.
I agree, actually. I think that's an important point. I mean, it's kind of a boring point, like you say, because it's not something explosive. It's not like, oh, well, when we won the debate with these people, or when we smashed this, or when we knocked that out of the park. But it is important, because I think what you get with a lot of groups is you get that initial burst of like, right, we're doing something new, we're doing something big, everyone gets on board, everyone's interested. And that buzz kind of dies away within the first sort of 6 to 18 months, you know, the initial, you know, and I've seen this, I've seen political parties birthed and they have an initial big meeting, a couple of hundred people there, everyone talking about what they're going to do. And 6 months down the line, 12 months down the line, you know, they have another meeting, or an AGM happens, you know, a year or so down the line after they formally have submitted all their papers to the Electoral Commission. And they've got 40, 50 people there. And you're thinking, well, where's, you know, that buzz of 200 people sort of fizzled out. And then these parties become what I call zombie parties. But I think the fact that we're still under the media spotlight, they're still attacking us, they've still got their feet on our heads, trying to drown us, and that we're still going is important. But I'll say my next thing of the year, it kind of dovetails with what you were going to talk about, is actually the camp. Now, the camp is something that's been the longest going PA event, because it preceded patriotic alternative. It started off with just sort of 12 people in Edale. And for the camp to have grown from 12 people to a family festival with, you know, comfortably over 200 people there, families, children, and to be doing it on our own private land now is something that I'm really proud of. That's been a big thing. And I sort of, you know, I'm not really a big outdoorsman. I do enjoy hiking, but I'm not the kind of guy that sleeps in a tent very often. If, you know, I love walking, I love being outdoors, but, well, I am a bit of an outdoorsman, but I'm not sort of a tent guy. You know what I mean? I like to get back home and have a shower and go to bed after I've done my hiking. But I think the camp has grown really, really well. And it's interesting as well, observing the way the camp's gone, in that it's not me and you doing it. So a lot of smaller political groups, it's the two leaders who are basically, or a team of two or three people who do everything. But the camp last year was completely put together by a volunteer group that absolutely wanted to be there doing the camp and have made it their thing. You know, they found the land, we got a gazebo, we had this, you know, and when I say gazebo, a lot bigger than the gazebos, it's more sort of like a small marquee where, you know, we had live music, we had fire pits, you know, there was lots of different things. There was guys there doing fitness with a boxing bag. There was a great, well, it was a good hike, except for when I got everyone stuck in that bog. That was my fault. But, you know, I did really enjoy that. And I think the camp went really, really well. And I'm really pleased to see, you know, it be an example of, from that, you know, like, you know, people say from small acorns. And if somebody said, well, you know, like almost a decade ago now, because it must have been about 2017 when the first camp was, you know, a decade ago, you'd hold a camp with 12 people and it'd grow to over 200 with families and kids. You know, that's steady progress. And I'm really proud of that. And I'm already looking forward to the one this year. So that's my second pick. What's your second pick?
I was going to have the camp in one of my picks. Can I just elaborate on what you've said?
Because yeah, we can have the same picks. Yeah.
For me, it's, I like the family aspect to it. Obviously, you know, if you want to go to the pub with a few of your friends from the region, have a couple of drinks or whatever, people do that. But a big part of it for me, having two young children who are aged four, just gone four and one, it's the number of families who come and bring their kids. There's a lovely lady who's very active in the family and ladies chat who's from down south. She brought her daughter, who's the same age as Catherine. They were playing together. And she also brought her mum and her sister. And I just love that because that's the kind of environment that we have at PA. You know, you're not going to feel like you're not welcome or that you don't fit in if you're a woman or if you're a young child, because there's other people there similar to you to play with and talk to and engage with. And the last 2 years, I've come to the camp by myself because obviously the first one, Sam was in prison. The second one, Sam was out on license, but he wasn't allowed to come to the camp. So I've stayed in a building nearby for the last 2 years just because I thought, do you know, like if you wake up in the middle of the night and one of them needs a bathroom or something, do I wake them both up? And, you know, that kind of thing. So I thought easier to have a room while I'm by myself. But this year, Sam is able to come to the camp because his license ends in a month and a half. So I'm really looking forward to actually being able to get in a tent this year and get stuck in and cook a breakfast in the morning and, you know, stay a bit later on a night time when all the music starts, you know, the people playing their instruments and the games and the tug of war and stuff like that. And the camp is, it's always such a good event because it's your friends that you're surrounded by. And normally when you're with these people, you're in an environment that's a little bit more maybe hostile if it's a demo, or hardworking if you're out leafleting. But just to be able to, you know, sit around a campfire, go for a hike and that kind of stuff with these people that we work with all year, it's just brilliant. So I was going to say the camp as well.
Okay, well, I've picked a couple of things, and you've picked a couple of things. I'm going to let you go next because I don't want to pick something else you're going to pick, you, because otherwise I've got the advantage of picking first. So you go next for number three.
Okay, well, probably an obvious one, but I was going to say the conference. Being able to meet Jared Taylor was something I never thought I'd be able to do. you know, obviously he wasn't supposed to be over here. And getting Jared Taylor here and meeting him, that was amazing. I'm not going to say that I don't think him and I agree on 100% of things. I think we agree on a lot of things, but you can't doubt how intelligent the guy is and how much he's contributed and how much he's helped our people. And he's a living legend. So to meet Jared Taylor at the conference, and at the end of the evening, when I sat down at my table and I was having my dinner, he came and sat on my table with me, and I was chatting to him, and I gave him a PA pin badge and a Red Squirrel pin badge from Grandma Towler's, and he took them home with him. So it was just brilliant to meet him, and also to get Steve Laws back as well, because obviously Steve Laws has spoken at one of our conferences before, and that was a good speech, but he came back last year and it was just like, wow, like the amount that he'd improved and how confident he was and his arguments, and he was just a complete firecracker. And to meet him again and, you know, to be friends with him and have a good relationship with him, it was really nice to meet Steve again as well.
I agree, and I was obviously going to say the conference. And one thing I want to say about the conference is, you know, again, with the conferences, the quality of the speakers we've had, you know, we've had Warren Balog, Jared Taylor, Joel Davis, Blair Cottrell, you know, and lots of others. I'm not going to go through all the names of everyone, but we've had some real big hitters. We had the Golden One at our first conference. You know, it really has been a who's who of nationalism, not just from Britain, but also from Europe and around the world. And I think this year's was particularly good because I don't think people expected us to manage to get Jared Taylor into the country. That was a huge, huge thing for PA to achieve. Obviously, now there are very, very restrictive laws about who can and can't come into the country. Britain has adopted its own ESTA-style electronic visa system that basically checks people's social media and runs a background check. We managed to get Jared in despite that. People were shocked. It went off very peacefully. And another thing is, the left didn't actually find out where the conference was until days after it had taken place, and pictures were out on the internet, and they could do some sort of fishing as to, well, you know, here's a picture of the main stage. Let's, you know, Google all the conference hire places in the across the Midlands and see if we can, you know, compare the pictures of that stage with pictures on their website. And that was quite good as well, because, you know, there have been other groups that year in, year out, their event seems to be discovered, you know, several hours before it takes place. We've kind of escaped that, and we've had very good security, but we've also had massive numbers. Again, you know, we had 200 people at the conference, and not only that, but Steve Laws put his and my speech up on X, and between them, they got hundreds of thousands of views. And people were kind of impressed at, you know, the fact we're still going, we're still having these big events. And to pull something off of that size and for it to be peaceful and for everyone to have a great day and to have no complaints at the end of it, it is really what you're trying to do. So, yeah, I was really particularly proud of that as well. Now, I suppose now we've had three each. I'll go next again. And I'm going to say one of my favorite things of last year is we really, really ran with the prisoner support thing. Now, people remember that from 2024. And you see a lot of groups and they come up with a good idea and they kind of run with it, but then they abandon it the minute it's not fresh. So there are a lot of small parties or a lot of campaigning groups. They come up with ideas, they run with those ideas. But fundamentally, when those ideas, you know, become, how can we say it, a little bit sort of past the sell-by date, they're not bringing in the number of viewers or the number of donations they once were, groups tend to drop their support for it. And like, we'll shelve that and we'll come up with something new. And I suppose this goes with Laura's consistency argument, that one of the things that we managed to keep doing last year was we kept doing the prisoner support. We kept giving money to people who needed it. We gave £1,000 to Lucy Connolly. That was quite a big one. And we gave thousands of pounds to other people who deserve it. And we're still doing that now. And one thing that I really, really like about PA is that we've got people who become committed to these endeavours. And they stick to it. They keep working on these projects. We keep helping the families of political prisoners. And, you know, we still have money in that fund. And we didn't say, well, OK, that's the project closed. We'll take the money now. You know, we'll have a night out. And that's what some groups do. Instead, we were like, well, look, this money's earmarked for what we said it's earmarked for. And we're still giving that money to people who need it. And I've got to say, I'm really proud of that. And I'm proud of the consistency. And it is a bit boring. You know, for some people, that's a bit boring. Some people need that constant kind of dopamine hit of a new campaign every 6 weeks, or else it gets boring. And that's what a lot of groups do that grift for the fundraising, that are constantly sending out begging letters. It's a new campaign every week. Quick, donate. This new campaign needs your money. But we've sort of been more consistent. We've stuck to the things that we think are important. And I think that's important, because the political prisoner problem is not going to go away. If anything, over the next decade, or at least under the next few years of the Labour establishment, until they are potentially booted out by reform, the issue of political prisoners is going to grow and grow and grow. And no one else is looking after those people. And there are groups like Toby Young's Free Speech Union that are about as useful as a chocolate teapot, because he is not going to help genuine victims of this anti-free speech crackdown. He's only interested in helping his Tory mates who have, you know, made some boozy joke about a tranny somewhere. But we're actually helping real families who really need it. And that's the other part of this that I'm proud of. We are making a difference in people's lives at ground level. And that really does count, because a lot of groups don't do that. So last year, I was happy to see that continue. And it really did blossom and become what it needed to be. And hopefully now, with Sam coming back this year, I'm really hoping, because he did his Christmas thing, but obviously he was in prison, so couldn't continue that. But I'm looking forward to more things like that that help real people at ground level. So I've done four so far. So it's your fourth now, and then we'll have a fifth each.
That was my fifth one, the political prisoners thing. I remember when we went live with that, and all our enemies were like, they're going to keep the money. And then we revealed the first one. I think we gave, was it 1,000 or 2,000 to Lewis Carver's family? And then our enemies were like, they've only given away 1,000 and they've kept the rest of the money. And then we kept churning them out, like 1,000 to this family, 1,000 to this family, 1,000. And then they just went quiet. And I was like, are you going to say sorry? You know, for saying that we were going to steal the money. But obviously they don't. They just go on to the next thing. But I think we still have about £7,000 in that pot available to give out to the families of political prisoners. And like Mark said, it's not a problem that's gone away. It's still here. You know, people are still getting arrested for speech crime, for attending demos, that kind of stuff. And there was, I think it was on your channel, I saw a mother and daughter in Scotland who'd... So it's still a continuous thing. Scotland, that's even worse than down here with these speech laws. But yeah, so that money, that's what it's for. You know, it's not going on anything else. And we haven't taken an admin fee. We haven't said, right, we're going to give 90% to you and take 10% for the organisation. Every single penny, 100%, has gone towards the families of political prisoners. And we have an admin team that are working on the project. And, you know, even still, we're trying to find people, get in touch with people and get that money dished out. And it's been a really great honour to work on that project and to be able to help people instantly. And it's like, you know, I like to think that we're an organisation who doesn't just post about things and moan about things, but we try and think of solutions to fix things. It's like, you know, a lot of people talk about migrants in hotels while British people are on the streets hungry and cold. We take it a step further and we go and help those British people on the streets by giving them food and tents and sleeping bags and clothes and stuff like that. And I'd like to think that we're known as being a proactive organisation. But that was my fifth one. But to give you something else, which was my fourth one, it's the
Give me your fourth one then, and I'll give you my last one.
Okay. It's the number of family events that we had last year. We had an Easter egg hunt for the children in Easter, obviously. We had a Halloween trail in Halloween, various other meetups across multiple regions, actually, over the summer, Christmas activities going on as well. And it was great. You know, I mean, I don't really have much more to add on it other than I really love that aspect of PA, that it's, it's families, and you know, it's our children's future and the children of other people, their future, who we want to create a better country for. So the fact that they're involved with the organisation and we're doing things for them to entertain them and keep them happy, I really like that aspect of it, because I feel like I've made a lot of friends at Patriotic Alternative, you know, people who I talk to, not just about politics, but about all sorts of stuff. Other mothers who are raising their children in the same way that I am, you know, me and Sam are. So I love that aspect of it too.
Well, my final thing then, because Laura's done all of hers, and this is my final thing. My final thing was the Newark demo. Now, the Newark demo was really, really good. Going into that, I remember a few people thinking like, are we going to get a lot of people seeing us? We're not in the city, we're not in the town centre, we're just outside of it at the council office. There was a couple of people moaning online going, why are you outside the council office on a Saturday? No one works there on a Saturday. And I was like, look, just trust the plan, trust the plan. And we'd worked over this quite carefully, because Newark council offices are situated on the main road into Newark. So everyone that travels into Newark has to go over a small railway crossing to get into the town. And we stood there in front of the council office, which was obviously a great photo opportunity, a great place to gather because there's no one there to stop you on a Saturday. It's next to the train station, so everyone could jump off and get straight involved with what we were doing. But also, it was where that bottleneck was with the traffic going into Newark. And it was absolutely brilliant. We had so many people beeping. People were handing out leaflets. We would get people in the cars going past were taking pictures. It was absolutely fantastic. And the reception we got from the public at Newark was brilliant. And I remember afterwards, we all went for something to eat and, you know, just a quick drink in Newark afterwards. And it was just absolutely brilliant, because we went out and the opposition was tiny compared to the numbers we had. Our speeches were genuine ethno-nationalist speeches. The banners said everything we wanted them to. And look, people are going to say, well, it wasn't the biggest demo, but it was in an area where it's overwhelmingly white. It was in an area where the message was well received. And we did it our own way with a proper ethno-nationalist message. And I thought it was a really, really good example of how you can run a peaceful demo with no aggravation in an actual white area where the public are going to be receptive. And normal people came out, joined the demo, interacted with us, and it was a wonderful atmosphere. And at the end of it, you know, even the police praised us for how well we pulled that demo off, how there wasn't any trouble, how all of our guys were polite and well behaved. And it was one of the few demos around the country with only home nation flags. And when you look out there and there's a sea of English, Scottish, Welsh and Union flags, as well as some of the sort of reasonable flags like the Cornwall flag, etc. But there's no Israeli flags there. There's nothing like that. It was really, really good. And I felt at the end of that, we'd achieved something really good. And there was quite a feeling after that in the groups of like, yeah, we've still got this. You know, we've had this amazing camp. We've had this fantastic demo. We've got the conference to look forward to. We've been all over the media. You know, we're doing activism every week. We've got these great campaigns, but we're also doing these big demos. And there aren't many groups that do that many things. You know, there's some groups that they pop up once a year to stand half a dozen seats and get 1%. There are some groups, you know, that do a few demos and have lads at other people's demos. And they do those sort of like quite funny confrontational videos, you know, with great soundtracks. There's, you know, there's some groups that go out and they do training together or just camping. But we seem to pull everything in to one big sort of pot. And we sort of rebranded a bit last year with what we were. We said, you know, we're community, advocacy and activism. And I think last year we really embodied all of that with what we did. So we had the advocacy for the prisoners. We had the community, which is like your conference and your camp. But then we also had the activism, which is, of course, the big demonstrations. And I think last year was a perfect example of sort of what a nationalist group should be. And I hear a lot from Americans or groups elsewhere in Europe who contact us and say, look, we want to set something up like PA. And it's nice to know that we're being used as a template by other groups who want to do something similar. And I just hope this year we can build on that. And that's really a good point for sort of starting off. You've had your fifth, haven't you? Your fifth was the family events. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So we've had five each, but this is where we can sort of start off now with what we want to do this year. And we've got a guest now that we're going to bring in because we want to get this year started with a bang. And we're obviously going to be doing a demonstration in Warwick. Everyone who's on our mailing list will have seen that information. Everybody who's, gone to our website today will have seen the announcement. We've got graphics to go up on social media. When Laura's talking in a minute, I'm going to post them to the PA page so that people can use them, download them, share them, get people ready. But we've got a few big announcements. And we're going to bring in Joe Marsh now because Joe's our sort of super activist from Wales. And he's a man that loves a good demonstration. So he's going to talk about this and how, we would have done this in January, but January is sort of a dry month. People are all spent out after Christmas. First weekend in February, everyone's just been paid. And it gives us some time to organise this. So, Joe, how are you doing, my friend? Welcome to the panel. Did you have a good Christmas and New Year?
Yeah, it was brilliant. How was yours?
Very good, thank you. A bit quiet, but very good.
Yeah, same as me. I didn't really go anywhere. I visited a few people, but mostly just stayed in the warm,
So this demonstration in Warwick, this was actually your idea. You're the mastermind behind this. Tell us a bit about why this isn't so important, because that area has been sort of inundated with these migrants in the hotels, and they've been doing horrific things to young girls in the area.
Yeah, well, I've had quite a few people messaging me about it. The thing is, in Nuneaton is in Warwickshire. It's not far away from there. There was a girl, a 15-year-old girl was raped in Leamington, which is not far from Warwick. Warwick is the main place there. It's sort of the capital of Warwickshire. And then just up the road, you've got Nuneaton, and a 12-year-old girl was raped there. Both of these rapes were done by Afghans, right? There's been big protests in Nuneaton. They've had 400 or 500 people on some of the protests there, And in Warwick, they did a couple of little protests just before Christmas. And I'm not on Facebook, but people were sending me stuff from the Facebook pages. And people were they wanted to protest, but they were saying, "Oh, we're going to get called racist," and they got 40 people out, 15-year-old girl has just been raped. A 12-year-old girl's been raped just down the road. And you're still concerned about being called racist. You know what I mean? This is hypnosis. What's it going to take for people to regain their tribal instincts and try to push back against this? I just don't know, So I figured if we went there, I know that you'll get lefties grizzling about it because it's PA. So that's what needs to happen. And then if people want to come out and join us, then they can join us. And they join us on the understanding that we are doing it for our people. We're not a multi-culti show some of these other carnivals that go around. And we'll only have our nation's flags there as well. And, so if people don't want to come, if they're scared of being called racist, scared of being associated with us, if that scares them more than children being raped, then stay home, But I figure that we could get a good turnout there.
I think we can. And I think people are eager for something like this. And they're eager for something like this because, obviously, I'm not going to mention names here, but at one point the protest movement was flying high in the UK. Then there was a guy who decided he was going to try and take it over. He was calling protests week in, week out. And look, I'm not against the being protests week in, week out. But if you're going to make them big, well-organized, well-attended national demonstrations, it's almost impossible to do them every week because people don't have the money. And even if they had the money, I don't think people would have the time to drive the length and breadth of the country. And in the end, people were turning up at protests and some of them literally never left the pub. I remember one that this guy arranged. He was like, oh, it's going to be big. It's going to be big. People never left the pub. Now, that for me is a bust. And I'm not talking about going back to protests every weekend, but I think doing a big protest every 4 to 6 weeks so people can build up to it, you know, they can save their money up, and especially over the summer or warmer months. But to get this year started with something big in a place which really needs, you know, a nationalist alternative where we can go there, flags, banners, leaflets, and we can actually talk about the real problem. You know, this is demographic change, and white people are becoming a hated minority. They're becoming a victim class. I think this is all so important. How do you feel about this, Laura? Because this is going to be the first time this year, me and you speaking on the stage together. What do you think?
I'm looking forward to it, and I agree with Joe that if you're still bothered about being called racist at this stage, I mean, honestly, what is it going to take for you to get your head out of the sand? We were talking about little children here being, I'm not even going to say the words, but it's just, and you're bothered about being called a name, like, who cares? It doesn't mean anything. And so many of the people know that it doesn't, so many members of the public know that it doesn't mean anything. So I think the fact that it's Pierre that's organising it, the people who are going to attend are going to be, you know, decent, brave people. They're not going to care about that. Like you guys have said, no Israeli flags, nothing like this. It's a pro-British, pro-English, pro-white demonstration. There's nothing wrong with the word white. And I'm really looking forward to it. I wish that Sam was able to attend, but he will still have 3 weeks of his license left at that time, so he won't be able to. But it should be good, and I'm hoping we get good numbers. And I know we've got people from other organisations who are talking to us about it and wanting to attend and bring their people. So it's an opportunity for collaboration as well.
Well, look, I've got some big news. Joe, do you want to hear my big news?
Yeah, go for it.
Well, I've been on the phone to Steve Laws this evening before we've done this. I've asked him to come and speak as well. He's going to come and speak. He's going to bring some of his banners and some of his people too. So this is not just going to be a PA demonstration. Steve Laws is going to be there as well. And we are going to be doing more demonstrations throughout the year with Steve. We're not going down the route of being a partisan organization that blocks other people from coming there. And it's going to be a great way to kick off the new year, because it's not just going to be PA, but it's going to be other notable people. And obviously, on the back of that, we're going to extend this invite to other groups that are in good standing. So if you're part of another group that is in good standing, that, you know, people are enthusiastic about, and you're enthusiastic about PA, as long as you can stick to our code of conduct, etc., and you're not going to bring Israeli flags, you're more than welcome. And I think we should get as many people together, as many groups together. We should get as many organizations together, and we should do our best to make this the big thing that kicks off the new year. And we need to get things off on the right foot, because let's face it, the problems that we're facing, they're not going to get any better anytime soon. You know, this isn't going to be a situation where the problems, you know, we're up against are going to start sort of diminishing. You know, we've got an extremely hostile government. Illegal immigration is at an all-time high. You know, people are coming in from all over the world. There is no vetting of these people. It's primarily women and young girls who are the victims of this. And I don't think there's going to be any other group standing up to this, because the Tommy group certainly aren't, because they are not like us, racially or ethnically aware. They'll hold a number of, you know, large scale demonstrations in London where potentially, you know, tens of millions of pounds are just sort of wasted on what is sort of a boozy weekend in the capital. But I think we should put our resources into building a coalition of nationalist groups that are willing to turn up in these important places where people are victims, where white people are victims, and get the year kicked off. What do you think to that, Joe?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because, well, that was my highlight of last year, because, like, I mainly concentrate on Wales these days because for like 10, 12 years, I traveled all around this country going to demos and spending all my money and time, you know, going all over the place. And like lately, I've decided there's so much happening in Wales that I've been staying here, you know. But like we need to get back to the days where like I can't remember when it was. Was it last year, the year before? When all those demos, when we went to Cannock and all those other places, and it was flying. And like, you know, I walked through the crowd in Cannock and gave out hundreds of leaflets to people. And like, they were all like taking them and they were coming up to me and saying, can I have a leaflet? Can I have a leaflet? And all that. So, and like, not so long ago, that would have been unheard of, right? Because of the lefty lies and the Nazi slurs and all that. Most demonstrations were restricted to just your people. So you take, if you took 200 people there, you had 200 people. You know what I mean? But like these days, you're getting hundreds and hundreds of members of the public because things have escalated so badly that, you know, the public are ready for it. So we need to take it to them and give them the opportunity to get involved.
I agree. And obviously, we're going to be having a big push on social media to make sure that people know about this. I've already posted the graphic to Gab and Telegram. We've got a number of other graphics. We've got, in fact, we've got three different slogans that we're running with for this particular campaign. We've got deport all illegal migrants, stop the boats and close the migrant hotels. The graphics are clearly all produced on a template, so they're very attractive. You can send them out. It's part of a cohesive campaign. We've already emailed everyone who signed up to the PA mailing list. By the way, if you're not signed up to the PA mailing list, make sure you do get signed up. And we are... We're giving this a big push. You know, it's only the 9th today. We've got around a month to the date. I think it's 4 weeks exactly tomorrow. So really, you know, this is a perfect way to get the year kicked off in the right way. And we hope that many of the people watching tonight or people watching on replay will get involved. And if you can't get involved, you know, I'm going to say this, please do consider making a donation. You know, if this is the kind of thing that you are interested in, if this is the kind of thing that you want to support, please do make a donation. You know, you can either make donations towards me and Laura directly, or you can make donations to PA through the PA website. But do something. You know, these events, they do cost money. We are going to be having banners and leaflets printed. We're going to be having flags printed. We want to make the biggest impact possible. And, you know, when we ask for money, we're not saying we want thousands, but small donations from a number of people do add up. And let's face it, you know, we aren't spending this on getting a load of Maoris to come here and perform a haka for you or something ridiculous like that. You know, this is for leaflets, flags, banners, etc. And to make sure we have the biggest turnout possible. So I'm really hoping we can kick the year off in style. This will be in Warwick on February the 7th. It is a Saturday. The actual location of the demonstration will follow. So keep your eyes peeled for that. The speakers will be myself, Laura. Don't know if you want to speak, Joe, but you're welcome to if you want to. Steve Laws will be coming to speak as well. And we are opening this up to as many groups as possible. So if you are part of another nationalist group and you want to come in good faith and join us, get in touch. Let's get this year off on the right foot. So is there anything else you want to add to that, Joe?
No, I think this will be really good, you know, and I think, like, yeah, a lot of people from the local area will come, you know, because I was cringing watching that Facebook page, you know, just so many people. There was probably a few hundred people saying, I'd really like to go, but we're going to get called racist. We're going to get called racist. It was honestly, it was destroying me, you know, and but like, you know, I think people, the more it goes on, and it's just, there's not a single day that goes by when you don't see another horrific attack, you know? So I think, yeah, people have got a good little bit of time now to get organized. And I think we'll get good numbers and then we'll get another area and maybe like a month later we can do that, like, you know, and we'll pick up the pace again like we did a few years ago. Because until somebody started causing a load of infighting, the hotel demos were flying and the numbers were growing and growing, you know, and we need to get back to that.
Well, like I said, the person who ruined that, I think he knew exactly what he was doing by calling a demo every week. You know, the same as I do, Joe. You know, back in the day when you saw huge EDL demos and then people started calling them every week, once you go down that road, it kills the potential for any sort of momentum you've got, because people just can't afford to attend a demonstration every weekend, can they?
No, and it affects your numbers. And, you know, if we look at it strategically, we can do them every so often when people can afford it, because people need to, so it's not just the money, it's people need to spend time with their families, and they can't be going to demos every weekend, you know? So we'll put a few demos together this year, and hopefully they'll be epic and they'll be well attended, you know, because the people want them. I think all these people are going to London, you know, like this woman was telling me a few weeks ago that she went to one of the Tommy Do's and she traveled all the way to London from Wales. And she said she was looking around and seeing all these like gospel choirs and all this sort of thing. And she just wondered what she was doing there. And she said, I'll never go again. But like all these thousands and thousands of people, they're going there because there's nothing else. You know, and not only that, it's, you know, that this movement they got going there, they've got all these big social influencers, they've got all the accounts on every platform uninterfered with millions of people subscribed, you know what I mean? And they're allowed to do it because I feel it's containment, you know, and we need to give people an alternative, which is, you know, proper nationalism.
Agreed. So is there anything else you want to add, Joe, or is that it? Because then me and Laura are going to sort of do a few more announcements and then answer some questions.
No, that's fine. Yeah, I'll see you there. And well, we'll speak before then anyway. Like, but cheers for having me on, guys.
Thank you, mate. I'll speak to you soon. Cheers. So we do have another announcement immediately, and that is about our camp. So both myself and Laura talked about how much we enjoyed the camp last year. And usually we don't give out dates early, but get this in your diary. Our camp will be July the 3rd, 4th and 5th of this year. So put that in your diary. We're going to be advertising that soon on the website. We will have the ability to pay for that soon, so you can get your tickets in advance. And again, that will be open not just to PA members and supporters, but to all nationalists in good standing, regardless of the groups you're involved in. And we hope to build on what we built last year, because again, we have our own land. We are going to be doing this properly. This isn't going to be at some shared campsite. That's why we can talk about dates and things like that now. I know other groups, you know, have started shelving their family events because they weren't getting the numbers. Our numbers are going up at these events, and I'd like to see our camp even bigger this year. So it's going to be the first weekend in July. And a big bonus, this will be the first big national event that Sam will be back at. Sam will be back at the camp this year, won't he?
Yeah, me, Sam and our two kids will be there.
Does that mean you'll be camping?
Yeah, we'll be in a proper tent.
Does that mean I can go in a hotel?
Yeah, if you want to, I think you've earned it. Yeah, I can't wait. And, you know, every year when we do the camp, there's, because we announce the date a lot closer to the camp usually, there's always people who are like, oh, I'm on holiday that weekend, I've got something booked in with the kids. No excuses now. You know, and these are people who attend a lot of our other events. With us releasing the date this early, we hope that everyone will put it into their diaries on their calendars and be able to join us there.
Well, I hope so too. So that's the next thing. And now finally, I thought before we answer the questions, not many people have super chatted tonight, so I'm going to be reading them out soon. But if anyone wants to ask any questions or give any support, we'll be doing the super chats in a minute. You know, whatever you can afford, it's all very gratefully received. If you want to support, if you don't, it's not a problem. You don't feel compelled to, but it does help. But Laura, I wanted to ask you, What are your other hopes for 2026? Because obviously this is the first stream of 2026. We do these things sort of more irregularly now. But what do you hope for 20? I'm not talking politically. I mean, for us as an organisation.
Yeah. Well, obviously I'm looking forward to Sam coming back, and Yorkshire have done such a good job without him. You know, they've been out like every single week nearly over the last 2 years. But I think having Sam back will be a big bonus for them. I think they're all looking forward to seeing him. So I'm looking forward to seeing him. And obviously after everything that he's been through over the last 2 years, he has so much to tell, so much that he wants to reveal and so much that he wants to say. So I'm looking forward to that. And maybe you're going to ask him to be on PWR when he comes back and see how he's been getting on. But another thing I'm really looking forward to is the collaboration between the groups. And I guess this forms, this is the community side of PA. We have a really good relationship with the Woodlander Initiative, and Woodlander himself, you know, spoke at our conference, attends our conference, that kind of thing. A lot of our people who are with PA are also a part of the Woodlander Initiative. And I want to see more cross collaboration between groups, using that one as an example. Last week I was actually contacted, maybe 2 weeks ago, by a lady at the Woodlander Initiative who is interested in buying Grandma Towler's tea for her and a number of her friends. So they placed a massive order, we shipped it over to them, she dished it out between everyone, and now a load of people in the Woodlander Initiative who had never heard of Grandma Towler's before have switched to Grandma Towler's, and I give them a discount code so that they can get a certain percentage off their orders, and you know, we're helping each other like that. I've got a guy from Yorkshire who's bringing me over a sourdough starter so I can start making sourdough bread. And obviously, you know, we're not going to save the white race by making sourdough bread, but will it be a positive for our people to be more self-sufficient and to work together and collaborate more? Yes, it will. So, you know, tiny steps and little things that we can all do. But I'm looking forward to, you know, more collaboration, more self-sufficiency, more just creating our own sort of systems and structures and standing on our own 2 feet more, taking a step back from relying on the system and relying on big business. And that's the kind of aspect that I really like. And I'm hoping to see more, and I am already seeing more in 2026.
What I'm looking for most this year is sort of steady growth, but I am looking forward to getting back out on the streets. And I'm not just looking forward to doing the anti-migrant stuff. The anti-migrant stuff is the obvious thing for sort of PA or for an ethno-nationalist group to be involved in. But we're also staring down the barrel of jury trials being done away with. We're also staring down the barrel of digital ID. And I remember back in the COVID days, PA were at a lot of the anti-COVID restriction demos, putting out leaflets, talking to people there. And I hope to also broaden our appeal amongst other dissident groups. So if there are large anti-digital ID events in London, I intend to attend myself. You know, if Sam's back out and are on the streets when those things happen, you know, I'm sure I'll go down with him. We'll jump on the train together. You know, you can go and do these things. Take a few thousand leaflets, take a banner, be there, meet up with other people. And I think it's important that we really strengthen those three pillars of community, advocacy and activism. And it is a really thankless task when you're involved in electioneering. I remember being involved in elections when I was much younger, sort of between the ages of 20 and 30 with the BNP. And elections were exhausting. They came around every year and you kind of built up to this kind of pinnacle of activity, which would take place in sort of, you know, April. So election time would sort of kick off like late February, early March. You'd then get into April and it rise to fever pitch. First Thursday of May, you know, people would go to the polls. And then there would be the inevitable, well, we got a few in, but we're kind of disappointed. Things would die off. They'd go to sleep a little bit. And politics had this kind of depressing cycle where for most of the year, you were just attending branch meetings, waiting for occasional by-elections that would come up. But you were always building to next May. And as soon as next May came and went, you were immediately building to next May. And you were never off that sort of, or never out of that hamster wheel. And it was very sort of unforgiving, often very unfulfilling. And there was a lot of, I find it quite depressing. I mean, this is sort of a pretty introspective rabbit hole to go down. Don't worry, Laura, I can see you're looking at the clock. I'm not going to go into a 1 hour Mark Collett monologue of why I wasted my life or anything like that. Don't worry. But I am going to say, I remember being out there and doing the elections. And I remember going out there and leafleting. And you'd leaflet sometimes till your feet were blistered and sore. Then you'd patch them up with, sort of tape and plasters. And you'd get back out there and leaflet some more. And you'd go into those election counts. And you'd go in and there was sometimes dozens of lefties blocking the way, sometimes hundreds, preventing you from entering the town or, city hall where the count was going to be. You'd go in, they'd open the boxes, the other parties were being rude to you. All you could hear outside was Nazi scum off our streets being chanted by whatever the group was called at the time. Remember, when I got first involved in nationalism, the group was called the Anti-Nazi League. Then it was Unite Against Fascism. Then it was just branded Hope Not Hate. Now there's this... what's it called? Something Unite. What's it called? S-U-T-R. I can't remember exactly what that stands for. Stand Up To Racism. That's it. S-U-T-R, you see, branded everywhere. And these groups sort of change over time. They morph into... they're sort of the same people, but they just keep morphing into different groups and rebranding. And it was always the same, but you'd come out then at that town hall or that city hall and you'd have got your 5 or 10%, or maybe you'd do a little bit better, but you wouldn't win. And you'd go home and, you'd take your suit, your shirt, your tie off, you'd hang them up, you'd have a shower and you sort of sit down, you'd be relaxing and it'd all feel quite empty. It would all feel a little bit like, well, I've spent the last 12 months building up to this moment and we haven't got anywhere. And you'd then, a few days later, you'd dust yourself off, you'd have a meeting with people in your local branch and you'd say, well, what do we do next? Do we put out thank you leaflets? Do we put something up following up the election? How do we get back into this? Because next year there's another election. And one thing that I always like about PA is it doesn't feel like you're in a hamster wheel. There's always something different going on. We do demos. Sometimes we help parties with elections. Sometimes we are out leafleting. Sometimes we're doing help the homeless. Sometimes, you're out doing a camp or a hike or just meeting somebody for drinks and a meal for their birthday. But there's always something happening and it's always something different. And it doesn't really feel like drudgery. It doesn't really feel like you're on this never-ending treadmill to nowhere, which you kind of did with the BNP. And I remember that feeling of deflation. I remember that feeling of being like, God, that last 3 months of like intense work, it was all really for nothing. And, the BNP felt like that. And when it collapsed, it felt kind of, depressing. But now... PA's not like that. You know, 1 week you're at a camp with a few hundred people, then you're at a big demo in Newark, then you're sneaking Jared Taylor into the UK and you're like, ha ha, that was brilliant. And then you're at your Christmas dinners and you've got your demos, or you see the young lads doing their multiple hikes and camps a year. And as Laura said, we even do kind of your Easter and Halloween events for the kids. I think having that multifaceted organization is something I like. So if you said what was the thing I was looking forward to most in 2026, it's just the fresh approach that we've got. And the fact that, I'm not dreading the 3 month sprint into an election where we're going to get pummeled and waste thousands of pounds and then have to come on a stream and tell you guys how it was really all secretly a big win that we did that, it's better doing it this way. And I am obviously looking forward to seeing all of you guys in the new year. I hope to see you in February. And if not, I hope to see you at a camp or a conference. You know, I'm looking forward to Sam being back on the streets. I'm looking forward, you know, to taking on the establishment on multiple different fronts and broadening our appeal. I think there's a lot to fight for this year, and I hope you're all part of that fight. Anyway, let's do the super chats. Not many people have super chatted tonight. So if you're watching on replay, please do consider giving something after the show's ended. Odgier gave $10. Thank you so much, and said, Happy New Year, Mark. Well, thank you very much. Open Borders for Israel asked, would you be able to get whitedate.net on? They want to rebuild their site after the relentless cyber attacks. Look, I am more than happy to work with anyone, and especially help nationalists who are in need. And if whitedate.net, which is a really good idea, you know, wants my help or wants our help, reach out to me, mark@thefallofwesternman.com. You know, my doors are always open to people in need. Laura knows that. Everyone knows that. And if you guys need help, you know, I'm here. Gus in Lanzarote sent $10. Thank you so much. And said, hi, Mark, I emailed you a question topic on white oriental mixing after you mentioned the other way. Don't worry if you don't have time to do it, but I think it's an interesting topic. Happy New Year. Yeah, I mean, we haven't got many super chats. Do you want to talk about white and oriental dating, Laura? Is that something that interests you?
No, and it shouldn't interest other white people either.
Well, let's see what Gus has to say. He sent $10 and he sent a question. So let's read what Gus has got to say. Is it going to come through? Where is it? Where is this? Ah, here it is. Gus says, you mentioned the issue of white males with Oriental women on PWR the other day. I, like yourself, Mark, the only non-Europeans I'd consider would be Latin South American with a fair bit of European in them. However, there is a big trend. And he says he thinks that this has happened for three reasons. The first is feminism, that this has only occurred since the 90s. Once upon a time, the lonely divorcee would get on planes to Thailand, and they could have easily have found before the 90s 6 or 7 out of 10 white females. But feminism has convinced every average female in the 2020s that she has the right to hold out for the Mr. Perfect 9 or 10 handsome rich alpha. He also says education, the modern education system, is taken over by PC and female social conformist values. An eccentric male outlier genius with 130 IQ, such as Newton or Bowden, would never hold down a job in a modern university, whereas a midwit 120 IQ socially aware female will excel in such an environment. This has led to things favouring the female skill set, such as coursework, becoming more important. The end result is that women today tend to be more educated and thus obtain better jobs than men. And since, as Dutton says, they mate on social status, they won't marry down. And finally, says the service economy, as you once remarked, Mark, the industrial working class don't tend to exist anymore on a large scale. There are no longer millions of heavy industry workers, miners, dockers, jobs that men tended to do well and thus earn more in. A new economy of office, PR, sales, middle class type jobs has emerged. These jobs tend to match the female skill set better. Hence, women are beginning to earn more than males. So as Dutton says, they won't marry someone who earns less. For these three reasons, I tend to judge less harshly the white males who go with Oriental females. However, when I see Heidi Klum, I may be more harshly think poorly of her. What do you think about this, Laura? Do you think that white men are dating Oriental females because they've sort of been forced into this by feminism and by changing social values?
I think he raises some interesting points, and I don't disagree with anything that he said. But regarding the issue of white men dating East Asian women, I think they're probably, if we look at trends of the overall group, they're probably less sort of boisterous, would you say, and maybe a bit more feminine and less sort of feminist, you know, wanting to, like he mentions, the power trips and the I can do everything a man can do. I think they're probably more likely to want a traditional life and support traditional values. So I can see the appeal with that. But I personally would never, I mean, I'm married now with two children, but I would never date somebody out of my race, because my race matters to me and I want it to continue, and I want my children to be the same race as me. And also I am just not attracted to, you know, in a physical way, to men of other races. I don't think I ever have been. So I think, you know, if we're going to have expectations of women, then men need to to do the same as well. And we need to be supporting each other. Not, I'm not saying that Gus is doing this, but instead of seeing each other as, you know, you're the one that have messed it up for me, we need to be building each other up. And I think for men, just learn how to talk to women, you know, just learn how to hold eye contact contact and talk to women. And you might not get a yes on the first proposition that you make, but women will respect if you have confidence. So work on your confidence. That's the number one tip that I could give, really. And then I think women do need to accept that we're not the same as men. It's not that we're worthless, you know, in how equal we are, we're worth the same, but we're not the same, we're not interchangeable. And that's okay. It's okay to have certain roles in your relationship which are traditional, have been, and that have been going on for thousands of years. It doesn't make you weak for wanting to do that or for propelling in that area. And I just think a lot of women do sort of have these like Pavlovian responses that are very feminist and are very, oh, I can't do that, or, you know, why can't a woman do that? It's okay to say that we're different and maybe you can't do that, but you can do other things instead. So I just think as men and women, we need to be supporting each other, building each other up, and working on our own personal flaws and issues, and trying to really be the best person that we can for the opposite sex.
I look at this and I find it quite interesting. And I find it interesting because this isn't a group that's been pushed by the media. So my first thing is, when people talk about interracial relationships and you look at interracial relationships in the media, it's nearly always a black man with a white woman. That is the media stereotype of a mixed race relationship. And that's something that is pushed heavily by the media. I remember a film that William Pierce deconstructed called Save the Last Dance, where there was a white, beautiful ballet dancing female whose father was quite strict and authoritarian and wanted her to dance in the ballet, but she wanted to go and dance and do street dance and ended up falling in love with a young black male who she went and defied her father and went and did the street dance with. And I remember this because it was something that I remember reading a lot that William Pierce wrote and listening to his broadcasts. And I remember him deconstructing this and saying how it was sort of this perfectly produced piece of propaganda aimed at, you know, rebellious young girls, and ensuring those rebellious young girls would then go out and date black men. And there has been huge propaganda, or a huge propaganda push, to get women to date non-white men, specifically men of African descent. But that sort of hasn't really been mirrored in the statistics. The statistics are that white men chase Oriental women more than white women chase black men. And this hasn't been done. This hasn't been propaganda. This is not something that's part of the propaganda push. It's not being propagandized. It's something that seems quite organic. And people often complain that my eyes are darting all over looking at the chats. Well, of course they are, because I have to manage the chats. I'm not in a studio. But I pick things up in the chats. And Aunt Sally said, I noticed our men marrying Oriental women back in the 1980s. So this has been going on for quite some time. But I think, and I do like the Japanese. I've got a massive respect for Japanese. And I think Japanese women, although I don't find them sexually attractive, I do find them quite strangely sort of beautiful in their own way, but not sexually attractive, because I'm just not sexually attracted to women of other races. But when white men go over there, what they find alluring is these women treat them with respect. They treat them like the man of the house. They treat them like heroes. And these men will have grown up in households where their dad was the man of the house. And when the dad got home from work, you know, his wife, their mum, was happy to see him, you know, kiss on the cheek. Your dinner will be on the table in 45 minutes. Go and grab a quick, you know, go and grab a quick shower or a bath and clean yourself up. You know, dinner's going to be on the table. The kids are finishing their homework. And they remember this fondly. And they want to be in the position their father was. That, you know, the father figure is the primary role model for young men. And before the advent of the broken home, most young men would grow up wanting to emulate their father. So these young men, they grew up in an environment where, you know, mum was cooking the tea, she was respectful, she was polite, she was modest, she doted on the kids, you know, she enjoyed creating, you know, culinary treats for her husband and making sure the house was nice and ironing his shirt. Then he goes out into the real world and finds some feminist harpy who tells him, you know, that if she's going to be living with him, she expects tea on the table and he can iron his own goddamn shirts. And at that point, he's in culture shock. He's not going to be his dad. He's not going to grow up into the man that he wanted to emulate as a young boy. Then he goes to somewhere like Japan or, you know, Cambodia or Vietnam or the Philippines, and he meets a young girl there who's many years younger than he is, and she's looking at him as if he's a superhero and saying, "Ooh, I would love to cook you you know, this seafood broth that we have. You know, why don't you go and take a shower and relax, and I'll be in there with the food soon." And he's thinking, well, I've just landed in heaven. You know, this girl's young, she's beautiful, she wants to have my children, and the dinner's on the table. And I don't think it's a sexual thing. I don't think it's a perverse thing. I don't think the men are chasing these women because they have, you know, what was, and I'm not using this term as a racialized term, but it's a term that is regularly used. People say yellow fever as if all these white men have got this, you know, incredible desire to go with oriental women. And that's not my term. And I don't, you know, call people yellow as a derogatory term. It's just what it's known as on the internet. It's what it's described as in the media, etc. It's joked about in that term. I don't think they're all out there going, "Oh my God, Japanese women are perfect. I'd never look at a white woman again." They're going with these women, not for racial or necessarily sexual reasons. This isn't some sort of perversion where white men, you know, are all like, "Oh my God." I'm not saying no white men fancy oriental women above white women, but it's literally a traditional, cultural, these people can provide me with the life my father had. And I think it is very telling that white men are kind of chased into that position where they end up embracing different racial groups because those racial groups emulate what was the norm in the West, maybe 40 or 50 years ago. But unfortunately, it still leads to, or can lead to, inward migration. You know, one of the situations about migration, you know, is, you know, if you spoke to Steve Laws, he'd want these men's lives all sending back. He'd say, you know, "I'm more sort of forgiving about things like this." You know, and we are, you know, I'm on a slightly different page to Steve. I always say, you know, we'd have like a night. You know, I mean, I think me and Laura, we're sort of, we say 95% white British, you know, so 95% indigenous is what we would settle for. We think that's reasonable. But I still wouldn't want there to be some kind of open door system where we're bringing in massive families from overseas because white men have married some people. Similarly, I don't want white women marrying, you know, Pakistani men or Somalian men and bringing their whole families over. That would still have to be immigration control in respect of that. But I do understand that these men are often lonely, although it's not a choice that I would personally make. However, I am very respectful of Oriental cultures, especially the Japanese, because they invented Nintendo, which is like the best thing ever, essentially.
Just to add to that, though, I don't think that all hope is lost, because if you do look at the happiness trends of women, as women are getting more and more freedoms, they're becoming more and more unhappy. They're popping more pills than ever before. They're more anxious and depressed than ever before. And if you look at surveys and polls that ask women, you know, "Would you like to be a homemaker? Would you like to have children?" A lot of women are saying, "Yes, I would like to, but I'm unable to because of financial reasons or whatever other reason, not meeting the right person until I'm old," for example. If you ask women, "What is the perfect amount of children that you would like to have?" the top answer is 3. And obviously the fertility rate in this country is a lot less. So, I mean, just to use me as an example, I went to university, I got my degree, I graduated with first class honours, I got a high paying job. and I was unhappy and I quit it all. And now I'm a homemaker, a wife and a mum, and I have a small family business and I volunteer at Patriotic Alternative, and I earn a lot less money than I did when I worked, and I have a lot less freedoms with my time because my children are very young than I once had. But I'm happier than I've ever been. And you know, I was happy this week because I've been making bread, and Sam said to me, "Oh, I'm really loving that you're starting to make bread," and he was nibbling away at it, and it made me happy to make him happy, even though it's something so simple. And I think a lot of women do feel that way. So I do think if we give the ability to reverse this, I think a lot of women would go for it. I don't think it's down to hatred of men or personal choice. I think it's the country that we live in. I mean, Woodland has just made a comment in the chat about you need two salaries, you know, for many homes. And it's true. So I think a lot of people do things because they have to, or they feel they have to, whether that's financial, societal pressure, you know, whatever. I don't think it's necessarily a choice.
I agree. And, you know, and I do think that a lot of women hit a certain age when they realise that they're going down the wrong route with their lives. You know, when I met my wife, she was very career driven. We've now got two kids, and you know, she's coming to the end of a year-long maternity leave because she took the whole of maternity leave because it was important to us that she was there for our son. You know, and we structure our life around our children. I think a lot of women are now returning to that. And that's all I'm going to say on this, because I was going to make some like stupid jokes, but I thought when Laura was talking, I thought I'm going to say something really silly, but then she would have grumbled at me, and the chat would have said I've lowered the tone. So I'm not going to say anything stupid tonight. I'm going to be very well behaved, chat. So this is me at my best. New year, new mark. No stupid jokes about the wife or anything like that. So we'll move on.
I'll tell her.
We'll move on. And Sally gave $5. Thank you so much. So thank you, Mark and Joe and Laura, for all you do for our people. Thank you so much. The Resident Baker gave $10. Thank you so much. Said, evening, you two. Hope you're both well. Looking forward to a great 2026. We might not be able to save the white race with sourdough, but it's a good place to start. Yeah, well, your sourdough is rather excellent, Resident Baker. And I have sampled it multiple times and do very much enjoy your sourdough. Although I'm a big fan of tiger bread. What is your favourite bread? I think my favourite bread is definitely tiger bread. And do you know what I like it with?
What?
Do you know what I like it with? Have you ever had those baked cheeses? We get these baked cheeses. You put them in
a little circle pot.
Yeah, you put them in the oven and you have something like, you know, cheddar cheese with chorizo inside it, and then you bake it in the oven, and it's like this bubbling hot molten pot of cheese. Obviously don't eat it straight out of the oven, because like it'll just stick to your mouth and you'll be in intensive care. But it's really hot. You break up your chosen bread. I really enjoy tiger bread. I like dipping the tiger bread in it, cheese, bread, and something great to have with it is some like really nice fatty pork, like some belly pork and a bit of apple sauce. So you've got cheese, apple, bread, pork. Really, really good. Really, really fatty. Excellent on like cold winter nights. And not too expensive either, because, you know, stuff like tiger bread, stuff like cheese, and pork is a particularly reasonable cut of meat. And if you get the crackling off it, that's really nice too. That's a bit of a tip for you guys, you know, if you're down for sort of Mark's culinary tips, that is definitely what I would go for. So yeah, do you have any tips about bread?
I like sourdough bread. That's all we get now. But, I mean, we get bread from the Resident Baker sometimes. He drops us off a loaf.
I've tried his bread. It's very good. For some reason, Entropy signed me out. I don't know why it's done that. I'm trying to re-access it as we speak to make sure there's no more super chats. There might not be. If you do want a super chat there, super chat please. But yeah, I'm back signed in, So there's nothing else there. We've got a few super chats on Rumble. Thank you for those who've sent them. ArchiePee007, thank you so much. You gave $5. And I appreciate your work, Fawn, on behalf of the national identity as a nation of white suppression. It's truly inspiring to know PA and its contributors are pushing back. Well, thank you so much. Spartan Sadakar gave $2. Thank you so much. As Hell Not Hope would be a good name for a metal band. Indeed, certainly too good for Hope Not Hate.
While we're talking about Hope Not Hate, I meant to ask you, did you see that one of their contributors has been convicted of being a pedo?
Yeah, a Labour councillor. I think his name's something like, oh, I forget his name, but Steve Laws broke the news, and he's actually a Jewish Labour councillor. I mean, it's sort of like he's you know, the trifecta.
No,
of
it. He's not,
Jewish, Jewish Labour councillor and Hope Not Hate contributor has been found guilty. Well, not found guilty. I think he's admitted it in court. He asked a 13-year-old girl if she was still a virgin. He was sending sexual messages. I'm just waiting for him to get off with it, because you can imagine any judge is going to look at a Jewish guy who writes for Hope Not Hate and was a Labour councillor and say, well, just give the man an award. You know what I mean? That's how it works, isn't it? If you're a Labour councillor and you've got a PC packed full of child porn, it's basically a get out of jail free card. But I did see that, and it's, It was big news, and Steve Laws broke it that he was a Hope Not Hate contributor. Then a few others looked into his background, and there you have it. He's one of them as well. So Hazelnut 3000 gave $10 and said, thanks, Mark and Laura. Thank you so much. And Iggs 22 gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, hi, Mark. Tommy's grifting hard for Israel, and it's getting more and more awkward to watch. Do you think he'll get a lot of heat this year? I'll say this. One thing I like about being me is I basically get to do and say what I want. Now, I don't earn a lot of money, and I certainly don't earn sort of Tommy money. But it does give you the ability to say what you want and do what you want. Now, the interesting thing about being in my position is it gives you that freedom so you can make the take you want. Whereas with Tommy, he's very much in the pay of powerful Jewish individuals, people in Israel, and he absolutely has to say what he's told to say. And he's going to keep saying that, because these people get so much money that they're just not going to stop, are they? You know, it's $7,000 a social media post for these big content creators. So if he makes, let's say he makes a post a week, he's making probably more in a month than, you know, decent content creators make in a year. You know, this is how bad it is. But so I don't think he's going to stop. And I think he's shameless. But I also think he is getting pushback. But I don't want to black pill. I think people overestimate the pushback he's getting. And what I mean by that is sort of myself, Laura and PA and Steve Laws and Joe Marsh, you know, could you get a better lineup for a demo? But how many people are we going to get at that demo? 400-500 people at most. Now, Tommy, when he calls his next demo in London, he's probably going to get 400,000. Now, I don't want a black pill, but because he's had a little bit of pushback on the internet doesn't mean that the world's all of a sudden against him. It's very easy to ratio people on social media. You know, I say this as well about products. You know, everyone knows I'm a fan of gaming, and, you know, there are games that have sold tens of millions of copies, but then the fans get angry and they go and review bomb them. And everyone's like, the fans hate this. The fans hate it. Well, I'm sure the company doesn't really care that 200 fans have downvoted something on Metacritic when it sold 20 something million copies. And it's the same with Tommy. You know, people will ratio him on Twitter and call him out for his hypocrisy, but he is getting paid handsomely, and he's still going to draw the biggest numbers of anyone next year. So when you take this into account, it's going to be very hard for somebody like him, or impossible for somebody like him, to ever course correct, because why would he? Why would the guy course correct? Why is he going to change his trajectory? He's getting paid handsomely for it. I would imagine that in about, what do you think, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, he gets more super chats. He gets more from Israel in payments than I probably make in super chats all year. You know, the guy is rolling in it. And when you're talking about somebody with that much influence and that much money, he's in his ivory castle. And I know he does a very good job of playing like the common man on the street, but he really isn't. You know, he spends the kind of money on a T-shirt or a jacket or a pair of shoes that we wouldn't spend on a family holiday. You know, it's kind of obscene when you talk about it. You know, people were pointing out that one time he had this pair of shoes on which cost thousands of pounds, these designer shoes. Well, I'm sure me and Laura have never been on a holiday that costs that much money as a family holiday, let alone a pair of bloody shoes. And when you're talking about that level of money, when you're talking about that level of influence, I don't think we should underestimate him. But he is a coward and he is a worm because he'll never debate me. You know, he'll never debate me. He knows who I am, but he'll never debate me. And he knows why, because I'll trounce him. None of these cowards will debate me. You know, and some people say, oh, well, Mark, why do you speak to these Muslims and these blacks? Well, at least they'll have me on their show and have open discourse with me. Most of these white civnats are actually worse than migrants and non-whites, because at least the non-whites will have sit down, have a cup of tea with us and some dialogue. You know, it's just the way it is. Do you want to add anything to that?
Just that I guess I feel like a lot of his followers and supporters have maybe moved past him politically. And don't necessarily agree with everything that he says. Not the ones that I have spoken to out and about and stuff, but still he's a big guy, isn't he, in the country. I don't mean people like Ricky Doolan, who obviously are not where we are, but I do think a lot of his supporters are genuine nationalists, to be fair.
Yeah, and I think that people like Tommy fear people like me, because I reckon if I stood up at his event and gave a speech about white demography, I think 90% plus of people there would be cheering far louder for what I said than anything he said. Simple as. Anyway, Ranulf White Wolf 11 gave $5. Thank you so much. He said, I started my racial awakening in Japan, continued in Korea, briefly moved back to the US, and now I'm in Russia with a beautiful traditional white Russian girlfriend with green eyes. No more yellow. Well, congratulations. I think Russian women are particularly beautiful. I think Eastern European women are extremely beautiful. But as a British guy, I don't know. Like, I've dated women from different ethnic groups. They've all been white, but I have dated Eastern European women. But when it comes down to it, I never felt quite as at home dating those women as I did a British woman. I think it's because, like, I just wanted an English woman because they sort of understand the humour, and there is that shared thing when you sit down with somebody who understands what it is to be the same as you. It kind of felt wrong being with an Eastern European woman. And despite how attractive they can be, and they are very, very beautiful, understanding each other on an ethnic level was more important to me. But yeah, if you want a Russian woman, mate, and you're going to have beautiful white babies and she's stunning, you knock yourself out. No one's going to complain about that. Well done. And I hope you do go on to have children. I hope that you have a very happy family, and congratulations on finding it. I hope you, I hope you achieve everything you want. And I should imagine that post this war in the Ukraine, there will be excess Russian and Ukrainian women that need scooping up, and it better for it to be a handsome white Western man doing it than some migrant, you know, shuffled into those countries to replace us. Anyway, that is the end of the super chat. No one else has sent anything. If you want a super chat after the show, you obviously can, and it would be very kind of people who do that. If you want to do that, you can do. If you've watched and enjoyed it but didn't watch live. But that is the end of the show. Laura, do you have any final thoughts before we wrap things up?
Well, just like to remind everyone about the demo. Mark's posted it on his Telegram channel, and then the actual location will be revealed in what time, Mark? The actual location? Maybe a week before?
A week or so. We're just finalising that, but people know where to get to for travel.
That's basically the thing. And stuff.
To keep, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, I hope to see some of you there, and yeah, just enjoy the rest of your evening, have a nice weekend, and I'm sure I'll see you soon.
Well, I just want to say thank you to everyone. Thank you to the lovely Laura. Thank you to everyone who tuned in, and thank you to all those who donated so generously. It means the world to me, and I hope to see you all sometime in the new year, preferably at this demo. But if not at the demo, please do come and see us at the camp, which is the first weekend of July, or at our conference. We don't have a date set for that. Or get involved in your local group. There's going to be lots of different activities throughout the year. I hope we continue with the successes that we've laid the groundwork for over the past few years. I hope we continue to have well-attended events and that we continue to grow and prosper. And I'd like everyone to be on board with that. So, yeah. Anyway, thank you for being with us tonight. I hope you all have a wonderful new year. And if you're out doing activism this weekend, you know, stay safe and make sure you do everything the right way. And as I said, I hope to see you all at the beginning of February. Thank you. Love you all. And good night.